Blog Talk Radio.
OWS supporters, the opening music was called No Banker Left Behind, and it was off of Ry Cooter's new album, Pull Up Some Dust and Sit Down, which you can find at his website, nonesuch.com/album/pull-up-some-dust-and-sit-down. Today's show has a lot of clips from various folks that spoke at the wet masses at Occupy Wall Street this past weekend. All clips were filched from YouTube, and you can watch their entire speeches on YouTube, the links to which will be on my website after the show ends. I will also include a little commentary on what's become known virally as It Only Takes 20 Minutes to Shift the Blame, where in the span of 20 minutes, the New York Times changed at least the first paragraph of its write-up from being protester-friendly to basically blaming the protesters themselves for the arrest. At least that's my point of view on it. There's quite a list of things to talk about, so let's get started. First up, we're going to have Joseph Stiglitz, a cut from him at the OWS this weekend. He spoke to the masses, just a brief bit of his Wikipedia bio. Joseph Stiglitz is an American economist and a professor at Columbia University. He is recipient of the Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics in 2001 and the John Bates Clark Medal in 1979. He's also the former senior vice president and chief economist of the World Bank. He is known for his critical view of the management of globalization, free market economists, whom he calls free market fundamentalists, and some international institutes like the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. In 2000, Stiglitz founded the Initiative for Policy Dialogue, a think tank on international development based at Columbia University. Since 2001, he has been a member of the Columbia faculty and a university professor since 2003. He also chairs the University of Manchester's Brooks World Poverty Institute and is a member of the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, whatever the hell that is. Stiglitz is an honorary doctor of Durham Business School, an honorary professor at Tsinghua University School of Public Policy and Management, and a member of the Executive and Supervisory Committee of CERGEI, CERGE-EI. Stiglitz is one of the most frequently cited economists in the world. Let me go ahead and play that clip for you now. Hold on a second. Here we go. This is Joseph Stiglitz speaking at the Occupy Wall Street movement in New York City this weekend.
Talking about economics, I want to say something about democracy.
Before talking about economics, I want to say something about democracy.
In July, I was in Spain.
Talking
to the aficionados there, the protesters.
Yeah.
privatized game.
Liberty, socialized laws, is a privatized game.
That's not capitalism. That's not a market economy.
Okay, that must be the end of it. Hold on a minute. I didn't think it ended that quickly. But anyway, like I said, Stiglitz is one of the most quoted economists in the world. One of the sites I was checking out had said that Stiglitz looked surprised by the call because they actually had called him to ask him if he would speak down there. And he was surprised that, you know, that he got the call until he did show up. And he was entertained by the fact that they had to repeat, you know, the way they do it is because they cannot use bullhorns. They have what's called the repeat form of speaking the protesters use at first, but then he seemed to enjoy it. He pointed out that it was illegal to use a bullhorn at the park on a Sunday, and he said that it was an example of too many regulations stopping demonstrators and not enough from stopping Wall Street from behaving. He said that Wall Street got rich by misallocating capital and by socializing losses and privatizing gain. That's not capitalism. It's distorted economy. Madrick mostly spoke about predatory lending. I got that small quote from businessinsider.com. Now I want to play a clip from Jeff Madrick. Jeff Madrick was with him at that speech as well. And Jeff is also someone that is well respected. He's a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, and he was on Keith Olbermann's show last night to discuss his visit to the OWS group. A short wiki on his page says he's a journalist, economic policy consultant, and an analyst. He is editor of Challenge, the magazine of economic affairs, a visiting professor of humanities at the Cooper Union, and director of policy research at the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis, the New School. He was educated at New York University and Harvard University and was a Shorenstein Fellow at Harvard. He is a regular contributor to the New York Review of Books and a former economics columnist for the New York Times. He has also contributed to online publications such as the Daily Beast and the Huffington Post. He's also the author of several books, including Taking America and The End of Affluence, both of which were on New York Times Notable Books of the Year list. Taking America was also chosen by Business Week as one of the 10 best books of the year. His book, The Case for Big Government, was named a finalist for the Penn Galbraith General Nonfiction Award for 2007-2008. His latest book, Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to the Present, is a history of the American economy since 1970, which argues that deregulation of the financial industry, the financial sector, allowed the industry to do tremendous damage to the economy. Like I said, it's his interview with Keith Olbermann last night, and it's also available on YouTube, the link to which will be on my website after the show. So let me find it. Here it is. Madrick on Countdown.
When protests against the Vietnam War began in the mid-1960s, academics held teach-ins in colleges and universities around the country so students could learn the history of the conflict and figure out which side they were on. On Sunday, an economics teach-in took place in Lower Manhattan, led by Nobel Prize-winning economics professor Joseph Stiglitz and Roosevelt Institute senior fellow Jeff Madrick, a regular course on this program. Economics 101 and its application to our ongoing crisis from two of the nation's finest economists, supported by the now traditional chorus of protesters who repeated every word.
In the early 2000s. George W. Bush. He said we would get rapid growth and job creation.
Jeff Madrick joins me now for a teach-in and what he saw and taught in Zuccotti Park, along with the Roosevelt Institute, his affiliation thereof. He is the author of The Age of Greed. Welcome back from the barricades.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How did you make arrangements, you and Mr. Stiglitz, to go down there and teach, and why did you want to go?
You know, there are people who are aware of us down there, and they actually contacted us.
Huh?
It's not as if there are no educated people there or no people who read newspapers.
Thank you for dispelling that illusion.
In fact, it was quite surprising how, even to me, who did this as a kid during the Vietnam years, how courteous the kids were,
yeah,
how eager they were to get knowledge, the good questions they asked. I am not trying to sugarcoat this.
Mm-hmm.
This was a real teaching.
Up until about a week ago, the protesters, particularly in the local press, was portrayed as this kind of incoherent group of self-advertising radicals. Did you get any of that sense? Did you get any kind of that the teach-in was going over people's heads, or they weren't interested, or anything?
No, it was very much the opposite. They were very interested. They tried to understand.
Mm-hmm.
We went down there because we think the facts, by and large, support their case, whether that case is built on instinct or extreme disappointment, frustration, fear. They are generally correct in the direction they're moving, and we wanted to give them the information they needed, and they wanted that information. I saw very few crazies protest for the sake of protestation.
I saw something, and I didn't. We haven't had a chance to talk about it. It's only happened about an hour and 10 minutes ago. I saw something on CNN tonight that made the back of my head blow off. I had to glue it back in. A reporter went down there for her first television show in her new series and portrayed all of these protesters as being there as opponents of the bailouts of the banks and big business, and explained that since the government made interest on those things, don't you realize this actually helped the economy and helped the government? Did I miss something? Occupy Wall Street was about the bailouts? Is that true?
Occupy pieing Wall Street is about the failure of Washington to do the right things regarding Wall Street. The bailouts did not force the banks to lend, did not deal with all these people who lost their homes and are underwater, all those things they had to. Let's not oversimplify too much. We needed those bailouts to unfreeze markets, but they were just not executed well. But there is one issue after another that these young people are interested in. They are not only talking about bailouts, but they are, in the broadest sense, talking about justice. Mm-hmm. When 1% of the people make 20% of the money, and 30 years ago they made 10% of the money, and a great recession follows, it is not a coincidence. There is a cause and effect, and I would love the people at CNN to start recognizing that, mm-hmm. or at least have some people telling them, or their viewers, that.
Do you, in response to this, if you're watching, you said, having participated in these things in earlier times on your own, when you're seeing this, there are some protests that are very specific and have a very finalized goal, get us out of Vietnam, a thousand other, even the manufactured Tea Party one had some specific goals, that they don't have an agenda with a checklist that says, we want these 23 things done by the end of the month. Is that necessary? I mean, as the old joke goes, do you know how electricity works? The answer is no. You still use your dryer and your everything else, right? I mean, is there anything wrong with a protest movement that is not sitting there with a set of immediate demands?
I think there is a kind of beauty and a beautiful democracy in all of this. And it's very noticeable. There are people called facilitators. Everybody is very kind to each other. There's not a hierarchy, and yet there's an efficient system. Let's do the teach-in over here. They shout out. There are these shout-outs, these echoes, which you've talked about. Let's determine who is going to speak in which order for the General Assembly, as they call it. But there are people with a variety of their own agendas, a variety of their interests. I think in time, an agenda will evolve for some of these people. I think there were splinter groups that follow one piece of the agenda and another piece of the agenda. So, frankly, I think at some point there should be an agenda. But I must say, I was very taken with the kind of beauty of the lack of hierarchy and yet the efficiency and the caring. You could not get away from a sense that these people cared. And when I walked, I spoke to this General Assembly, which was rather dramatic because you have this echo, an echo, right. an echo. And I walked off and these people would just say, thank you, thank you, thank you. And they had more dramatic speakers than I, but they were thanking me for information, for caring about them, and they in turn showed caring. I think caring about the country, and again, I don't think I'm sugarcoating this, they care about what's happening, and essentially, centrally, they are correct.
The economist Jeff Madrick of the Roosevelt Institute, the author of The Age of Greed, is always bringing light to complicated situations, this one included. Great thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Keith.
And you know who else went to see Occupy Wall Street firsthand? Michael Moore.
Alrighty, and that was Jeff Madrick on Countdown last night. We have a caller online, area code 813. I'm going to go ahead and open up the line for you. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. This is Anita, and I was at the Occupy Tampa on Saturday, which really went quite well, and we're having another event on the 6th, which will be Thursday, and then another event on Saturday as well.
Great. Do you have a personal website that you want to push? Were you putting information up?
I'm just putting the information out there. There is already a website for Occupy Tampa for, you know, Florida people that that would like to go to the Tampa one, and they're closer to the Tampa one than the Orlando one. But yeah, just look up Occupy Tampa. They've got the media team's already got their links on Facebook, Twitter. We have a YouTube. So there's, you know, we're pretty much entrenched in the social media end of this.
And
but
that's the best
I did
part
want
of
to. Yeah, have you looked at or seen any of the CNN broadcasts on this?
No, I haven't really watched much of the corporate media because they're just now really starting to cover it. I was going to ask you, is your local corporate media, newspapers and such, covering you guys down there in Tampa?
Very small articles, but one of the things that I was noticing in just about all of this, including the CNN reporting, is that they make this movement out to be created by young people. They don't tell you that it may have been created by young people, but the participants, you know, span all ages.
Exactly.
And also the other thing is what they're trying to force feed us through this mainstream media, I call it, is the fact that there's no clear, concise message for this movement, that they really don't have any goals in mind. So they try to say that with just about every single report, either in print or on television.
Exactly.
And as we know, I think one of the most important things we need to be doing is putting this out plainly everywhere on the social networks, what the demands are.
Oh, I know, exactly. And the OccupyTogether.org site is pretty good at putting out a lot of the information, including the General Assembly for the OS movement in Wall Street itself. And since this is a democratic type of movement, there is no one specific cause. They're trying to incorporate, you know, the fears and worries of everybody that's in the 99 percentile.
When it goes back to everything, this is what I was telling Gwen, your other host, when it goes back to everything, everything stems back to corporate greed, no matter what.
It goes
back to that.
Everything goes back to that.
Yeah, so we were actually on the same day, there was another direct action that I was supposed to take part in for No Nukes, and our local electric company is actually forcing their account holders to pay money into a pool to pay for a new nuclear power plant that hasn't even been built yet. It's basically in the planning stages. And this would be Progress Energy. The account holders are mostly in Pinellas County, but they kind of spread out through Hillsborough and the other Tampa Bay counties as well. So there was supposed to be a direct action. So what I've been encouraging people to do when they have all these separate little causes, I mean, not little, big causes, but
of
they're
course.
Spread out, is to... Everybody needs to join with Occupy Tampa. Number one, to boost the numbers. Number two, we're all there for the same reason, because corporate greed has taken hold of every aspect of our lives. And we all need to support one another, whether we be gay, straight, fighting against nukes, the Gulf oil spill, the environment, less money going to the military, or bringing the troops home. All of these are all rooted in corporate greed.
You're exactly right. And that is like the major message, that no matter how many sub-messages there are, it all comes back to corporate greed, and our government gives them whatever they want.
What I like about the movement is that there's no isms. There's no, you're a Republican, I'm a Democrat, you're on the left, I'm on the right. You know, there's none of that.
Yeah.
This
no,
doesn't
it's wonderful.
Even come into play here. And it doesn't even come into play who's going to vote for who in the 2012 election. This movement has nothing to do with that. So if people, you know, want to bring in their partisan politics, I think they're very quickly going to be ushered the door. You know, either you play ball and leave the isms out of here, or you can't be part of the movement, you know. So this is a movement for everyone, all Americans. And, you know, it's really crazy. I've been reading this great book about the history of direct action in the United States, but it also brings in the environment, and it's called, oh, my goodness, Brain Fart. I just have to pick up the book now and walk across the room and get the book. Deep Green Resistance. This book is written by Arik McBay, Lier Keith, and Derek Jensen, of course, who did the two books called Endgame, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And they bring up four ways that a revolution begins, or why a revolution would begin. And I don't want people to think that I'm saying revolution as a bad word. I tend to think it's a very positive word.
So do I.
It means change, you know. But these four things that they mention in this book are identificational withdrawal and the subsequent creation of new personal loci of loyalties to the American colonies as opposed to the British crown. This is what happened with our revolution in the 1700s. Mm-hmm. Economic withdrawal and boycotts of everything from tea to wool. So we haven't really begun the boycotts, but I know people that are down with this have already stopped buying. I stopped buying a long time ago.
Yeah.
Cultural withdrawal and the valuing of American art, products, and sensibilities. And the fourth was political withdrawal built around the colonial court system and state and colony-wide congresses for governance. So right there they're saying, you know, okay, you've got to forget about all this court system, bring it down to the local level. How are you going to fix things at the local level? So this is what happened in our revolution in the 1700s. And, you know, I'm looking at that and saying this is exactly what's happening now. So we are ripe for this.
We are. And if you think about it, that old saying, all politics are local, is very true.
Right, right. And that's why I ran for office myself, and I ran I won a small local seat.
Good for you.
I was voted in with over 82,000 votes, and I spent less than $300 for my campaign. So that can be done. We have to take the money out of politics. That is a big thing. We have to take the money
out
of politics.
Exactly. And not to interrupt you, but my next clip I play after I'm done talking to you, I'm not rushing you, is when Dylan Ratigan appeared there this weekend, and he's got a whole campaign just called Get the Money Out. And it's about getting the money out of politics. But
have the other thing that's the big, big issue, which is really one of the demands that I've heard from different, you know, occupies from across the country, is, abolishing the corporate personhood. So I encourage anyone listening to go to the website, movetoamend.org, sign the petition. Find out if there's an organization local to you, and if there isn't, form one. Do a meetup, do a Facebook event page. I just began the Move to Amend Tampa Bay. We have a strong Florida group of Move to Amend people that have been networking over a year now, almost over a year. So now we need to take this local. And in these local areas, you can do non-binding resolutions. You can do ballot initiatives. There's lots of things that you can do as a group of people to abolish corporate personhood at the local level, or at least try to nullify it so it isn't even a factor.
Exactly, and that should be something that we all are interested in, regardless of our politics. Unless, of course, you're part of the GOP.
That are just waiting for this to happen. And really, this is one of the main things of this Occupy movement is let's abolish this corporate personhood and the fact that corporations are now people and money is free speech. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. That is not American.
I saw a sign at Occupy Wall Street that said, when they finally arrest a corporation, then I'll consider them a person.
and there was another one at the Florida one of the Florida ones that said, I'll believe corporations are people when Florida executes one.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, that was like that. People had to sit up and take notice at that one.
And that hit two issues with one poster.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, we just had somebody go through capital punishment and be executed. I think it was either the same day or the day after Troy Davis, but it didn't get a lot of press. It didn't get a lot of media. But right up at Stark, it was at Stark, which is, you know, where they do these things in North Florida, just north of Gainesville.
Yeah.
The same night Troy Davis was
executed, they executed a white supremacist in Texas for almost a decade ago, I think. He drug a black man behind his truck for miles.
I remember the case. I remember when that occurred.
Oh, of course. And that's the one that makes it hard. It makes it hard for a lot of people, not to get off topic, but we are. That's what makes it hard for a lot of people on the death penalty. And I'm one of those people that just, I don't want a death penalty only because I don't want an innocent person to die. But somebody like that, you know, it for me personally, I see no other reason to keep him alive, especially if the if it was overwhelmingly proof that he did what he did. And, you know, that, but we're going off.
I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence and have been on the fence with cases like that. But, you know, as I've gotten older and perhaps a little bit wiser, I think that what would be worse for a black, you know, for a white man that killed a black man in Texas, what would be worse for him? Being executed and being put out of his misery after doing something horrific like that.
True.
Or letting him live in a prison where most of the population is black.
No, that's very true. That's great logic. And that's how I try to keep telling myself that I have to get off the death penalty bandwagon. And after Troy Davis, I pretty much told myself I am. I don't care how heinous the crime, they just have to go to prison for the rest of their lives. But that
and when I think about that, a man that did that horrific killing to a black man, did that horrific crime, and then he's kept alive instead of executed, you know, in prison he's not safe. He's going to get the shit kicked out of him every time he turns around.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be scared.
What kind of suffering would that entail if he stayed in the prison population for over 30, 40, 50 years?
No,
that would be
right.
A horrific life, a horrible life.
No, you're
and
right.
And more
right.
than enough punishment for the crime that he committed.
No,
so
you're right.
That's kind of how I look at it. And like I said, I was like you. I was on the fence for many years, but there's just too many mistakes being made in the justice system and too much of an opportunity for the wrong person to be executed.
Exactly. And to bring this back around to Occupy Wall Street, there is a large contingency of people there about the death penalty and about the Troy Davis case. And you know, they're marching in solidarity with the folks at OWS as well. So, you know, but to go back to one of your points, the corporate media is pretty much trying to always paint this as, they have no goals. They have no leader. You know, they bring up anything and everything that they consider to be negative. And if you really listen to Jeff Madrick that I just played, he laid out why that's a good thing, why there is not one person, and why the goals are so broad. And I will have on my website, I will have links to all those YouTube so that people can watch them and pay more attention to them. Or, of course, in Madrick's case, they can go on Countdown site and watch the whole interview themselves with him. And it is a beautiful thing. There's no way that I find that it's leaderless to be a negative point. It means that it's a true democracy if there is no leaders.
Yeah, if everybody's leading, everybody's leading. Everybody's taking a part. You know, in the General Assembly that I was in several times on Saturday, everybody's voice was heard. The mic was passed. Anybody who wanted to speak could speak. And
oh, you guys could have microphones to yours?
Oh, not microphones, but we had a bullhorn.
Well, bullhorn.
We had a bullhorn.
New York, they can't.
Pardon?
See, in New York, they can't have a bullhorn. That's, I'm glad.
Yeah, they're not, they weren't allowed, so they have to do the people's mic. But we did the people's mic for a while, and then somebody showed up with a bullhorn. So that actually was used at the last General Assembly, which was, it was nice. It saved a lot of time.
Yes.
But, you know, I really like the community involvement of the people's mic.
Oh,
and,
I think, right.
And, you know, you're feeling part of the community. And the other thing for communication that we do, you know, I'm also pagan. I'm an elected official, but I'm pretty open about my religious beliefs, and I'm pagan as well. Mm-hmm. And what we do always, you know, is when we're sitting in a circle and we're having a conversation or a discussion, you know, we pass the talking stick. The natives did it that way. You can pass anything. You can pass the hoodoo doll. You can pass whatever you happen to have that's right next to you. You can grab it and make it the talking stick. And then everybody gets a chance to talk, and nobody else talks over. You know, whoever's
exactly.
got the stick speaks. So that is a nice way to achieve consensus on things, too.
Yeah.
I like that everybody feels that they're a part of the decision-making. That way there's no power over
anybody else.
Oh, the other thing, let me plug this, too. Now, where are you? Where are you located?
I'm in the south end of the San Joaquin Valley in California.
Oh, okay. Well, to any Florida listeners, I just want people to know that Starhawk is going to be here in Florida. She will be at the Fort Myers UU Church, and she's going to be doing a weekend workshop on holding power well. So this is right along what we're speaking about. And she'll be there on the weekend, 4th, 5th, and 6th of November. And contact the UU Church for tickets or more information. But I think that her class, her workshop, is quite timely.
Okay.
So I intend to be there to actually take part in that. So,
great.
But I did want to put that out there.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I was going to bring this around to when you're talking about getting the money out of politics. I was going to go ahead and start and play Dylan Radigan's clip from when he appeared in New York City this weekend. Like I said, his point of view is that he's running a campaign right now to get the money out of politics. And
good.
He's been really good lately about opening his show with news on the Occupy Wall Street movement, and he did it yesterday. I'm not paying attention today, obviously, because I'm on the radio, but he's a good guy, and he spent 15 years in the financial professional, so he's somebody that I really believe knows what they're talking about. So
unless
there's more information you want to get out, I'd really like to start his clip.
Well, go ahead and play that, and thanks for letting me have my
little
speak.
Thank you for calling in.
And just thank you for everything that you all are doing on this radio show. It's so needed, and it's just the way we have to take media back and you know, get the word out, and we're
exactly.
able to do it. And so for now, we need to use it while we still can use it.
Exactly. And thank you for everything you're doing, Anita. We really appreciate it, honey.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, you have a good one. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. All righty. That was Anita from Tampa. And thank you so much, Anita, for calling in. Now, as I was saying, Dylan Radigan was there this weekend at OWS in New York City. His personal website is pushing Get the Money Out, and that's at dylanradigan.com. His short bio is, 3 years ago I left my 15-year career as a financial professional because I was disgusted and disturbed by the rampant evidence of corruption in the relationship between our banking system and our government. He is Dylan's actively running, like I said, a campaign on his personal website called Get the Money Out, which you might want to check out. And he's talking about getting the big money out of our political system. The byline of his campaign is, it's time to get the money out of politics, bailouts, war, unemployment. Our government is bought and we're angry. So I'm going to play a short clip of his speech at OWS. The full version runs 15 minutes and can be found and watched on YouTube. You can go search for it or look up my website and get the link to it after the show. Anyway, I'm going to play about 6 minutes of Dylan Radigan at the OWS on this weekend. Hold on, here it goes.
Mike check! My name is Dylan!
My name is Bull!
I live five blocks from here! I think you people are crazy!
I love the way you communicate!
The world has noticed your voice!
For 15 years I worked as a financial services professional.
Have you guys said that yet? the debate America deserves.
You demand the debate America deserves.
Is that both of our political parties are funded by a narrow group of well-heeled individuals. It's because they are bought.
It's because they are bought.
What do we do?
Thank you.
And that was Dylan Redigan. He seemed to get a pretty good response out of the crowd. He was getting a lot of cheering and clapping. I liked his message. It was pretty clear. Of course, somebody who's used to speaking to people would be pretty good at getting their message out there. Like I said, you might want to go to his website. I'm sure he might have his full speech there. And you can also sign his petition for Get the Money Out. His site is dylanradigan.com. Now, the other thing I was going to go into is the whole New York Times write-up controversy about the arrests on the Brooklyn Bridge, and it's quite interesting to me as I am a vehement opponent of most, but not all, corporate media. I do read the New York Times with an eye as to how they frame their pieces. So when a friend of mine, RJ, who writes at Naked Capitalism, sent me a leak to the Corrente Wire write-up about the changes to to the piece entitled Occupy the Brooklyn Bridge. By the way, Currenti Wire has great pieces, great write-ups of first-person accounts of the OWS movement, so I highly promote it to anyone looking for information, and specifically first-person accounts. I'm going to read a quote off of their piece on their website. Here it goes. I was near the back of the march, about three-quarters of the length behind the leaders, so I didn't take the wrong turn onto the bridge roadway that the 400 to 700 marchers who got arrested did. Amazingly, and probably because of one of their stringers, Natasha Leonard, got arrested. The New York Times has a good and accurate coverage of the incident. And then there was an update. It said, well, it was accurate, but it looks like some itchy-fingered New York Times editor decided to do something about that. And if you Google that phrase that I had said earlier, what did I call it? I have to go back. Oh, it only takes 20 minutes to shift the blame. If you Google just that phrase alone, you'll pull up over 1,000 different articles and blogs and write-ups about what the New York Times did, as well as a screenshot, which I had on my blog, of what within 20 minutes, how the first paragraph changed from basically looking pro-protester to being either A, non-committal, or B, siding with the police, depending on your point of view. Now, the other blog I want to mention on this is a gentleman by the name of Kevin M. Lerner. Mr. Lerner is a visiting assistant professor of journalism at Marist College. He teaches American press history, media law, narrative journalism, news editing, and reporting and writing. Previously, he taught journalism at Seton Hall University, LaGuardia Community College of the City University of New York. Lerner specializes in American journalism history, journalistic professionalism, including law and ethics, and journalism in higher education. He holds a Master of Science degree from Columbia and a Bachelor of Arts in English from the University of Pennsylvania. He was born in D.C. and grew up in St. Paul in Arlington, Texas. So I would like to read a little bit of what he put. Now, his Kevin's blog is presscriticism.com. And the name of his piece, if you want to go over there and look it up, is the name of that you can Google. It only takes 20 minutes to shift the blame and only a screen grab to implicate the Times. Now, here's a short blurb off of his blog. And I did contact him yesterday, and he gave me free rein to go ahead and quote him. Hopefully he's listening. He said he would. Anyway, here's what he had on his blog. There is an image making the rounds on Facebook right now, an annotated dual-screen capture of the New York Times front-page story on the Brooklyn Bridge arrests that were the dramatic high point of the Occupy Wall Street protests over the weekend. The left side of the image shows a screen capture taken at 6:59 p.m. on Saturday, October 1st. The lead it quotes at the time reads, "After allowing them onto the bridge, the police cut off and arrested dozens of Occupy Wall Street demonstrators." Then he goes on to say, "This excerpt clearly blames police and implies entrapment. In this version, police led protesters to their arrest by baiting them to do something illegal. Version 2 of this story, which the screen grabber grabbed at 7:19 p.m., giving us the 20-minute difference referenced in the glaring pink type of the graphic, has a much more sedate New York Timesy lead." And that quote is, "In a tense showdown over the East River, police arrested hundreds of Occupy Wall Street demonstrators after they marched onto the bridge's Brooklyn-bound roadway." Then he goes on to say, "The screen grabber obviously wants to imply that somewhere in the 20 minutes between screenshots, the Times either bowed to police pressure or at least changed the lead on its own to avoid pissing off one police plaza and probably also the mayor. In this reading, it is one powerful institution protecting another, which is exactly the sort of narrative lens through which Occupy Wall Street protesters and our anonymous screen grabbers see the world. And it may be true." Now, his article, to be fair, his article goes on and on. He's got a lot more information. Like I said, this is a man who teaches journalism and journalistic ethics. So I would highly recommend you read his entire piece. I had some back and forth with him about it. He agreed to some of my points. I agreed to some of his. But the fact remains that the New York Times did go in and edit, and it originally had one author, one writer at the very end. When they finally got through screwing with it, it ended up with three writers that contributed to the piece. I don't know if one of them was an editor, somebody with more power, but the point remains that it only took 20 minutes to shift the blame. So that's just something that, you know, that really gets to me, and it goes to the whole corporate media and how they want to paint everything. It's something that's always pissed me off, because the only way that I look to get news pretty much on a lot of the Occupy Together movement right now is I go to the OccupyTogether.org website, which will list all of the events happening all over the United States and the international ones. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's at least 5 different countries that have Occupy movements going on right now. Europe being the most. Actually, there's one in Mexico. It says Occupy Tijuana is there. The alternative media is doing a fantastic job of covering this. The corporate media seems to just try to always paint it in a negative vein. I'm sure most of you are aware of that. There is one article, though, I found that was published yesterday on the Washington Post in the business section. It's written by Colm Lynch. And the title of his piece was Wall Street Protesters Hope to Plant Seeds of a National Cause. Now, what I liked about this is, and I did read it over fairly quickly, but I think it does kind of give you a feeling that it's pro OWS movement. I'll read a short piece of that. It says, the New York's budding anti-capitalism protest movement began last month with a vague sense of grievance over the widening gap between the rich and poor in America. But in 3 weeks, it has provided fuel for a broader national anti-corporate message, drawing inspiration from the Arab Spring, but struggling to define its goals beyond a general feeling that power needs to be restored to ordinary people. Now, similar protests are springing up in Boston, Los Angeles, Chicago, and organizers in Washington plan a march at Freedom Plaza on Thursday to denounce the systems and institutions that support endless war and unrestrained corporate greed. On Monday morning, the scene at the heart of the self-styled Occupy Wall Street movement, Zuccotti Park, 2 blocks north of Wall Street, had the feeling of a street fair, which is the way the corporate media is always painting it, with women in brightly colored wigs playing with hula hoops. You know, he knocks it, but then here's another paragraph. Despite having no single leader and no organized agenda, the protesters insist they are on the verge of translating their broad expression of grievance into a durable national cause. The criticism has focused on the lack of cohesion in our message and our demands, said Arthur Cole Riggs, 23, a political activist from Madison, Wisconsin. But what the critics don't understand, he said, is the value of forming a direct democratic movement that is not controlled by political elites. The protests have drawn an assortment of anarchists, anti-globalization activists, and disaffected 20-somethings from North Carolina, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, the type of polyglot crowd that has been known to disrupt International Monetary Fund and World Bank meetings. My addition here is, those protests largely turned violent. There has not been one scintilla of violence in our protests here in the United States. And then he goes on to say, but the efforts have also drawn the support of union members, including New York transportation workers, who allowed some of the protesters to take shelter inside the subway system. Like I said, I think primarily this is it's a good write-up. It's a little bit more even-handed. You can find it, like I said, on the Washington Post.com website /business/economy. And then find it there based on his name, Colm, Colm Lynch. And I consider it a decent read for somebody who's writing for the corporate media. So Is there anybody else who's going to call in and spell me here, or do I have to keep running my pie hole? I really wish somebody else would call in. Doesn't seem like any of you guys are going to. But anyway, I will include a link to Kevin Lynch's Colin Lynch's article on my site after I end the show today. As some of you might know, I recently had major back surgery, and so I had told the host of the show, Gwen, that I would try to do 2 hours, but that the minimum I would do would be an hour because I can't sit for that long. It's really, really hard on my back. I played all the clips I'm going to play, so I think at this point in time I've been on the air for an hour, and I'm starting to back's starting to get a little irritated and scream at me. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off now. Gwen will be back on, one of the things I haven't done today is promote the sponsor of the show. The sponsor of the show is Roundtree7, that's the number 7.com. It's a collection of writers. I am one of them. Our goal is knowledge to the social conscience, and I really would like it if you guys check out their blog. If there's a lot of wonderful writers there. We even have a Canadian, Mike Stimson, who it's nice to get his point of view since he doesn't live in the United States, but he follows everything political here. And his posts are really enjoyable because you get somebody else's opinion that's not here in the middle of it. You know, he's sitting on the outside looking in. So they're our big sponsor here. Gwen's blog, Daughters of Isis, I believe is the name of her blog, is also one of the sponsors. My humble little blog is leftwingnutjob.net. I use a lot more foul language on my blog than I use here. I try to keep it clean because this is, after all, Gwen's show. Oh, my goodness, we have a caller. Thank you so much. Caller 212 area code, I'm going to go ahead and turn you on.
Trisha. Hi, Desi. It's Trisha.
Hi, Trisha.
Well, you had said somebody called, so here I am.
Oh, but, bless your heart. Thank you, honey.
I know your back hurts. And so,
yeah, but I can stand up when you call.
Oh, well, you can stand up. Well,
yeah,
all right.
See, I don't have to look at the computer
screen. I didn't have, not a whole lot to contribute today. I'm hoping to get down there tomorrow because all the unions are coming out tomorrow. Community organizations and unions will be joining the occupation. The march is scheduled to begin at 4:30. It's pretty much the same groups who were involved in the On May 12th march, which was New York City's. Everybody was mad because the banksters aren't paying any taxes. That's a national issue.
Mm-hmm.
But in New York City, it's a local issue as well because they don't pay any taxes here, which goes to our local schools.
Exactly.
And things like that. So it was a more localized demonstration back on May 12th.
Mm-hmm.
That organization has continued to exist as Beyond May 12th. It's like the Service Employees International, UFT, the transit workers, just local unions, but
there's some international ones too, or not international, but national unions too. So
that's anything that happens in New York City that's local becomes national just because everybody's half the world is based here and everything. So it gets a little we like to think of Keith Olbermann as a local guy. So
oh, yeah.
It's so that's one of our little conceits, I guess. But anyway, I think there's like 4,000 people have RSVP'd yes to the march as of yesterday. On May 12th or beyond May 12th. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to make it down there tomorrow or not. I have my own injuries to contend with, but later on in the week I'll go back to bring socks because, it's getting cold out there. And, it's been cold and rainy and everybody, those kids, I still say kids, even though they're old.
Me too.
You know, everybody there, but primarily the demographic is between 18 and 26, in which the, you know, 55% unemployment in that demographic, and they're saddled
with student loans.
Thank you for bringing that up.
That's important because they have the highest rate of unemployment right now.
They have the highest rate of unemployment. They have the highest level of debt that has come upon, you know, any group of, and I know you're out in California, and, you know, when Ronald Reagan became governor there, the colleges started becoming much more expensive, and so anyway, that's...
He didn't believe in free education. He didn't believe in free or cheap education.
You know, I always quote my old friend Dr. Woody, but, you know, he says that when Nixon and them were in the bunker looking out at all the college kids saying, hell no, we won't go to Vietnam, that's when they all got together and thought, well, we got to keep these kids from going to college. And, you know, that was the beginning of the Back to Basics movement, and also... you know, all of this dismantling of a public education system that used to be, you know, in my view, the glory of the world, and now you can't, you know, you've got
to... Now we're ranked 23rd, is the highest we're ranked in anything.
Yeah, and so anyway, I mean, it's... these kids are really facing a lot, and, you know, it's not just them, but they're my kids. They're, you know, they're our kids. They're our aunts, our uncles, and, you know, I mean, our nieces and nephews, and, I mean, these are our kids, and anyway, so they're cold, you know, and so if you go to the, anybody can go over to OccupyWallStreet.org or OccupyTogether.org or to the General Assembly site and find out what they need, get the UPS address, and because there is a local UPS office where the occupation can receive donations and boxes from anywhere. I know Gwen always likes to remind people to send homeopathic remedies since, you know, they can't dispense over-the-counter medications from their medical station. But, you know, they need everything. You know, they need everything out there, even trash bags. And but anybody who wants to contribute, you know, just $20 or order them some pizza can do all of that through the OccupyWallStreet.org website.
And the Occupy Together, the OccupyTogether.org also has a link at the top of their page where you can give money through a PayPal-type service. It is not PayPal. I will go over that towards the end of the show. Thanks for reminding me. But you can
give straight.
For somebody like me who's on a fixed income and on the left coast, I'm going to try to send them maybe $5 or $10 later on the week when I get my check. But
$5 makes a big difference.
I know it does.
If 1,000 people send $5, that's a lot of money for these people.
That's
what got Obama elected,
damn it.
Well, I'm not even going there because, you know,
I know
my blood I'm not even going to on that today. But, you know, because really, I think one of the points, I can't remember if it was Anita said or if I think Anita was mentioning that nobody really cares who's going to be running for president in a year because we have a problem today.
Yeah.
You know, and when they talk about, you know, money in politics, I read somewhere that it's estimated Obama's going to spend $1 billion green folding American dollars to get reelected. Now, you know, I don't think that makes him any better or worse than any politician in America today. It just goes to show you how much money needs to be in, you know, how much money is involved and how much sucking up you have to do to corporations to get it.
No, that's right.
So that's,
and it also keeps people from you and me from running for office, and that's what they want.
Well,
If they get the money out of
politics, you know, besides my history, you know, my history would keep me from running for office. But even if I could have enough money to get out of it, but no, it's scary. And what Anita did with just a few $100s, I mean, that's phenomenal. And the beauty of it is that it does start locally.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that the John Birchers with their funding from you know, the Koch brothers' daddy, you know, they showed us that years ago, that you start school district by school district and water board by water board, and soon you own the country.
Yeah.
So that's what they do, and I'm glad that Anita's out there, you know, putting a finger in that dike like the little Dutch boy. But
if you go down there tomorrow, will you be taking pictures and reporting on your blog?
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, it's hard for somebody as short as me to get up there to see. So I'm trying to talk a tall friend into going. But, you know, if I don't make it down there tomorrow, I make it down there on Friday. It's usually easier for me. And people are in it for the long haul, you know.
Yep.
I can't remember who said they were coming down on the 12th, but there was more talk from the unions because Verizon had, you know, the CWA, who was on strike against Verizon earlier this year, was also involved. And I think something, you know, that there's another march for Wednesday the 12th, but I need to verify that. But, yes, they are in there for the long haul, you know, that blankets, sleeping bags. And the thing that's the worst is the way that the police are so by the book when it comes to shelters that they can't even huddle together under a tarp when it starts to rain.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh.
They're saying, like, if five people put a shower curtain over their head, they call it a dwelling and make the kids stand in the rain.
And it's been raining a ton there.
It's been raining virtually daily for, you know, some weeks. And, you know, just 20 minutes here and 20 minutes there. But when you're cold and wet.
Well, you get hypothermia, and that's why the medics are so important, because those poor kids are getting hypothermia.
Yeah, and so anyway, that's why it doesn't really matter what day you get there with dry socks, you know. They
mm-hmm.
just need, they need to be warm, and we need to take care of them because they're out there for us.
That's right. They're going to stand
so,
up for us. So we all wake up. That's what the sign says.
That's what the sign says. And you know, and it's one, I think we were reading off yesterday, there was, I mean, it seems like there was almost 100 cities between the United States and Canada getting involved as per this weekend. And again, you know, Thursday starts the occupation of Freedom Plaza in New York, in Washington, D.C., you know, and that's this is an effort that, you know, that's always been partnered. You know, this is, we collaborate, and, you know, people have said on my own blog, there's been comments about how the efforts are wasted in Wall Street, that it needs to be more in the government, and I don't agree with that. I think it needs Wall Street and the government.
Exactly. I believe
you know,
that, too.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, anyway, I'm very looking forward to seeing what happens in Washington. I'll be
Great.
Staying here to be with my own folks. But, you know, there's a lot of people going, and Dennis Traynor, who does No Cure for That, was able to get funding for his documentary project. So he'll be sending out well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that the people in Washington are already, you know, have their equipment and know what's going to be happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, with this no corporate, you know, no media coverage, so they're prepared to make their own. Although, you know, the down at Wall Street, they've done quite well keeping the live stream up at Global Revolution. And, you know, so they've done quite well, and there's been a lot of, well, you know, especially from the bridge last Saturday when they were able to climb up and get some very good footage about what was happening with the cops.
Oh, yeah.
And, it was so they've done well in New York City, I think, but they're better prepared and have a little more funding for the D.C. thing, because the big, you know, the big names who have, well, like Margaret Flowers, for example, who was all up into the healthcare, single-payer healthcare, you know, these, and Chris Hedges has been involved from the beginning with Wall Street, with Stop the Machine, as has been Cornel West and all those guys. They've been stopping by Wall Street, but mm-hmm. their main effort has been focused on D.C.
We have another caller calling in, so I'm going to put him in on us, too, and see what they have to say.
Great.
Okay, hold on. Caller, unknown phone number, you're live. Hello? You're still live, too, Tricia.
Yeah.
I have a caller with an unknown phone number. It's blocked, so you're live, sir or woman. Did you hang up? The other third caller? Well, I guess they hung up. They're not there.
I guess so. I guess that, well, you know, I was like, oh, is that my mom? But she's not my mom, because I've been telling my mom that she needs to listen and call, because
oh, bless your heart.
The other day when I was talking to you and Gwen, I got mm-hmm. very passionate about some 9/11 stuff, and it was just so liberating to, like, all of a sudden, just like, wow, you know, holy cow, I feel very strongly about this and haven't said this, even though I've thought it for, 10 mm-hmm. years. And that is a really, so anyway, I just wanted to give you some props, because it's really a liberating thing to be able to say what you think in a safe environment, and that's what you're providing today.
Thank you.
And today and every day that you're
yep.
out there. And
every day it's going to
be
on.
Yeah, so anyway, I thought my mom could use it too. And so, because you know how it is when you're trapped in the suburbs and you have to be nice to your neighbors, and even though, you know, they're like crazy Zionists and everything, and so my poor mother. I thought it would be good. So that would be nice if she would do that. But maybe another day.
All
meanwhile, I've got to run and go to
okay.
I have a class tonight. But,
well, thank you.
If
you do show up to the march tomorrow, please call in call in the next day and let us know, so that we can send people over to your website, because I noticed a lot of people are craving first-person accounts. So,
well, you know, I write for Roundtree 7 now, too, so you can find
true.
It there anytime I go. You know, so I'll do that. Or, you know, and I put some photos up over at Menopausal Stoners, and I do still do a little work for Worldwide Hippies as well. So
you're all over the map, honey.
Well, you know, all over the map, as long as it's in a few blocks of my house. But that's the beauty of the Internet.
Exactly.
I'm just like that, too.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk to you soon. And
thanks for everything you do.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay. Unknown caller, I still have your mic open, although you're not saying anything. And I'll leave it open, see if you're going to speak up a little bit there. Anyway, I'll keep running my pie hole here for a minute. So anyhow, today's show, we had various audio clips of some of the speakers at Occupy Wall Street, New York. And we also talked a bit about the lovely changing of the article for the New York Times, which, like I said, if you want to Google just to find out what people are saying on it, the phrase to Google is, it only takes 20 minutes to shift the blame. And CurrentiWire.com has a great piece on it. And the gentleman I spoke of earlier, who's actually a professor of journalism, has a nice a nice view, as far as he has a professional view of the article and his feelings on it. And I would like to pump his blog again, which is presscriticism.com. His name is Kevin Lerner. And I also talked about Colin Lynch's article in Washington Post, whereas I felt it was a pretty much pro-movement oriented piece. And as far as I can tell, this is about the end of the show. So I'm going to go ahead and close with Ry Cooder's song from his new album. The song is No Banker Left Behind. And I've always liked old Ry, but that's because I'm old like Ry. But the name of his entire album is Pull Up Some Dust and Sit Down, and you can listen to clips from that entire album if you go to Mr. Cooder's website at nonesuch.com. That's nonesuch.com. So you guys all have a good day. We'll be broadcasting daily, 4 p.m. Eastern, So tune in. It's going to be a different host every day. If Gwen can't find anybody to sit in and spell her, then she'll be hanging in here. Bless her heart. She's been doing this nonstop since the occupation started. And y'all have a good day. And here's Ry Cooder's No Banker Left Behind. Good afternoon.
The bankers all are leaving. You better come round and see. It started in Revelation. They robbed the nation blind. They're all down at the station. No banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the station. No banker left behind. White House they went one day. They was going to call on the president in a quiet and a sociable way. And the afternoon was sunny and the weather it was fine. They counted out our money and no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the White House. No banker was left behind. Conductor's calling all aboard, we'll be leaving soon. With champagne and shrimp cocktails, and that's not all you find. There's a $1 billion bonus and no banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. When the train pulled out next morning, no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. When the train pulled out next morning,
closing out the show for us. Once again, the show is sponsored by Roundtree7, the number 7.com. My name is Dusty. I'll be back on sometime this week, probably for Gwen. I'm not sure when. My blog is leftwingnutjob.net, and all the clips I played, I will have links to everything, including the articles I discussed, on my website within the next hour or so. Anyway, y'all have a good day. Support the movement, folks. Occupy Together.org. If you want to give money, there's a link to that information as well. And like I said, I'm going to end the show here now. You all have a great day.